Well, today's a little bit different. I'm working without notes. My family just started reading in the book of Daniel, and there's just so much there. Of all the prophetic books, it's probably the one that I feel that I'm most able to track with, because not only does it have prophecy, but it also has narrative that is so rich and significant and full of lessons for us. And in thinking about this yesterday, I have these, it's kind of a treasure trove or a catalog of teachings from Brother DeJohn that reach back probably over 30 years, I would imagine. And one of them was reading from the first couple chapters of Daniel, and I felt like I found a little gem in there. I'm sorry I'm putting you guys on the spot, but a much younger DeJohn was praying, and while he was praying for a young single brother Yanni among them, and that God would have his will in Yanni's life. He was, I believe, if I have it right, praying for his future son-in-law. Anyway, it was precious. I thought that was nice. I think about Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar, and it's really interesting to contrast the two characters that we have there. There's just a lot there. Nebuchadnezzar, on one hand, I think is regarded as probably the most powerful king that existed in Babylon. His father was a king, and Nebuchadnezzar, I think he's known as Nebuchadnezzar II. He had widely successful war campaigns against surrounding nations, and while he wasn't able to conquer all of Egypt, he conquered most of it. There are extra-biblical accounts of him taking Jerusalem. It refers to it, I think, as the city of Judah, and then later, of course, he razed Jerusalem with fire and destruction. So, to give a little bit of backdrop, I thought I would actually start reading in 2 Kings chapter 24, which is kind of the entry or the beginning of the book of Daniel. Now, Daniel himself, if we consider Daniel, he had to be a teen, I believe, when he was taken. He was made a eunuch, kind of the choice of the crop of Israel. Part of the spoils that Nebuchadnezzar would have took were the people that he carried off into Babylon. And then Daniel's career through the book of Daniel would carry him into his 80s. He would have been an old man by the end of Daniel. So consider that at the beginning of the book, in the parts that we're reading, he was probably a teen or in his early 20s. And then the book would conclude with him being a very old man. So, I thought I would read in 2 Kings 24 before I read chapters 1 and 2 of Daniel. Let's see here. Let's start in verse 8. Jehoiachin was 18 years old when he became king, and he reigned 3 months in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Nehushta, the daughter of Elnathan of Jerusalem, and he did what was evil in the sight of the Lord according to all that his father had done. At that time, the servants of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up to Jerusalem, and the city was besieged. And Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to the city while his servants were besieging it. And Jehoiachin, the king of Judah, gave himself up to the king of Babylon, himself and his mother and his servants and his officials and his palace officials. The king of Babylon took him prisoner in the 8th year of his reign and carried off all the treasures of the house of the Lord and the treasures of the king's house, and cut in pieces all the vessels of gold in the temple of the Lord, which Solomon, king of Israel, had made as the Lord had foretold. This gets talked about more in the book of Daniel, but essentially they carried off all the precious things in the house of the Lord that were used for worship of the God of Israel, and used it in worship for the pagan gods that were served by Nebuchadnezzar. He carried away all Jerusalem and all the officials and all the mighty men of valor, 10,000 captives, and all the craftsmen and the smiths. None remained except the poorest people of the land. And he carried away Jehoiachin, to Babylon, the king's mother, the king's wives, his officials, and the chief men of the land he took into captivity from Jerusalem to Babylon. What's interesting is while I was researching this, there is actually extra-biblical evidence. There are these tablets that they found fragments of, and there's actually a reference to the provision that Nebuchadnezzar made for the royal family that he carried out of Jerusalem. How much oil to give them, how much grain to give them, what their allotment was while they were prisoners there. I found that interesting. And the king of Babylon brought captive to Babylon all the men of valor, 7,000, and the craftsmen and the metal workers, 1,000, all of them strong and fit for war. And the king of Babylon made Mattaniah, Jehoiachin's uncle, king in his place, and changed his name to Zedekiah. I'll stop there. Later on, Nebuchadnezzar returns and, of course, utterly destroys Jerusalem and leaves even more of the poorest of the poor people there to be plowmen and to work the ground. So having read that, that's a little bit of a backdrop to the book of Daniel. I believe that Daniel, along with his friends, would have been part of this carrying away of people, this initial carrying away of people into Babylon. So let's go to Daniel chapter 1. Now Jehoiakim would have been the king immediately preceding this king that got carried off. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the vessels of the house of God, and he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and placed the vessels in the treasury of his God. Then the king commanded Ashpenaz, his chief eunuch, to bring some of the people of Israel, both of the royal family and of the nobility, youths without blemish, of good appearance, and skillful in all wisdom, endowed with knowledge, understanding, learning, and competent to stand in the king's palace, and to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. So this is where Daniel comes in. He was part of this choice crop of Israel that was going to be selected to be educated, which I think would have included a lot of pagan practices. They're going to be part of the wise men or the counselors to King Solomon, to King Nebuchadnezzar and be his servants. Pardon me. The king assigned them a daily portion of the food that the king ate and of the wine that he drank. They were to be educated for 3 years, and at the end of that time, they were to stand before the king. Among these were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of the tribe of Judah. And the chief of the eunuchs gave them names. Daniel he called Belteshazzar, Hananiah he called Shadrach, Mishael he called Meshach, and Azariah he called Abednego. Now, if I understand this right, these men had good Hebrew names, and they were replaced with names that would have been tied to the pagan gods and practices of Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon. And so the very names that they were given, if you can imagine this environment that they were placed in, the very names that they were given would have been an affront, an offense, and a shaming to these three men, or to these four men. But Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. It's hard to know exactly why the king's food was an offense to them. Some believe it may have been tied to the fact that it was probably offered in sacrifice to idols. It's ultimately unclear, but what we know of a certainty is that God honored Daniel and his three friends in their resolution not to partake of the king's meat, the king's food from his table. They were not going to partake of it, and actually prospered them in a way that I don't think would have been possible. If all you're eating is vegetables, which is what they chose to eat for their diet later on here, you probably wouldn't have gained weight had it not been that God's hand was on you and prospering you in in your resolution not to eat the king's meat. Therefore, he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself, and God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who assigned your food and your drink. For why should he see that you were in worse condition than the youths who are of your own age? So again, this man is concerned about the same thing. You can't just eat vegetables and expect to look better than people who are fed better than you are. So you would endanger my head with the king. Then Daniel said to the steward, whom the chief of the eunuchs had assigned over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, test your servants for 10 days. Let us be given vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance and the appearance of the youths who eat the king's food be observed by you, and deal with your servants according to what you see. So he listened to them in this matter and tested them for 10 days. At the end of 10 days, it was seen that they were better in appearance and fatter in flesh than all the youths who ate the king's food. So the steward took away their food and the wine they were to drink, and gave them vegetables. As for these four youths, God gave them learning and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. At the end of the time, when the king had commanded that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king spoke with them, and among all of them, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore they stood before the king, and in every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters that were in all his kingdom. And Daniel was there until the first year of King Cyrus. Now this is interesting. It sounds a little antique-y. It sounds a little out of mode that to hear that kings had these counselors. They were wise men. They were people skilled in superstitious arts. And Daniel and his band, they were part of this thing. But there's a distinction here. There were those that served the pagan gods. They were astrologers. They were magicians. I think the King James calls them sorcerers. No, not sorcerers. What is it called? Soothsayers? Yeah. These were part of the king's entourage of counselors. And I've thought about that, and I've thought, you know, that seems a little odd or out of place. And yet, up until present day, you know, these people have always had the ear of power and the ear of authority. And you may think, even in the United States, that that's odd. But up until present time, it's a phenomenon that has happened. And if you include, you know, to this day, presidents will keep advisors who are supposed to be in touch with the evangelical parts of society. U.S. presidents will. And I don't think it's so much that they're looking for prayer advice so they get prayed over, but just trying to have a finger on the pulse of what these people are like. But even in the time of President Lincoln, his wife, Mary Todd Lincoln, had seances with people who were supposed to be giving them advice into the future. President Lincoln even attended one of those. After his death, she hired a charlatan, a fraud, who would take these spirit photographs. And there's a photograph of Mary Lincoln sitting there with the ghost of Lincoln standing over her. And then even in more modern times, in the 1980s, Nancy Reagan hired and regularly consulted an astrologer out of San Francisco. And that went on until, I think, 1988, when it was found out I think one of the chief of staff in Reagan's administration fired this astrologer. It sounds bizarre, but these people were consulting and speaking even into modern-day American politics. It were not so far removed from what was happening in Daniel's time, is my point. It's something that's been going on all throughout history. And as I thought about these magicians, these wise men, I thought, you know, what a sweet job if you could have had that post. It doesn't really matter whether you're speaking the truth or not. I mean, you can kind of make up what you want. Maybe some of these guys were convinced of their own powers. Some of them, I think, were charlatans, which of course is a scammer. I think that comes out in some of their testimony later on here. And it all sounds good until you deal with King Nebuchadnezzar. And now it's not such a good position anymore. In the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His spirit was troubled, and his sleep left him. Then the king commanded that the magicians, the enchanters, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans be summoned to tell the king his dreams. So they came in and stood before the king. And the king said to them, I had a dream, and my spirit is troubled to know the dream. Then the Chaldeans said to the king in Aramaic, O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation. So far, so good. King wants an interpretation of his dreams. Maybe it'll be like Joseph and Pharaoh, only it doesn't quite go that way. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, The word from me is firm. If you do not make known to me the dream and its interpretation, you shall be torn limb from limb, and your houses shall be laid in ruins. But if you show the dream and its interpretation, you shall receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. There's a couple of things here that I think are interesting. First of all, this is not a reasonable request, and it's going to be the thing that creates the biggest distinction between Daniel serving the God of Israel, the one true God, and these men who draw their so-called powers from pagan gods. They recognize that they can't do this thing that the king is asking, but for the one true God, it's a small request. He's able to grant it easily. The other thing that I think we see here is a little bit of the character of Nebuchadnezzar. This guy is immensely powerful, and he moves from death threats and trying to kill people to fawning and flattering like that. He just flips so quick. And I think that's such a distinction and a difference between King Nebuchadnezzar and who becomes his chief advisor, which is Daniel, who is ever even-tempered. He's confronted with all of these really extreme changes in position by King Nebuchadnezzar, and he's not fazed. Whether he's getting thrown in the lion's den or interpreting a dream, he's just totally unfazed. And I think it comes from his communion with the Father, which is lacking, of course, in Nebuchadnezzar. I'm sorry for the side trails, but I just think that's interesting, and more of that comes out throughout this chapter. Therefore, show me the dream and its interpretation. They answered a second time and said, Let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will show its interpretation. The king answered and said, I know with certainty that you are trying to gain time because you see that the word from me is firm. If you do not make the dream known to me, there is but one sentence for you. You have agreed to speak lying and corrupt words before me till the times change. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can show me its interpretation. Listen to their answer here. The Chaldeans answered the king and said, There is not a man on earth who can meet the king's demand. For no great and powerful king has asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or Chaldean. The thing that the king asks is difficult, and no one can show it to the king except the gods whose dwelling is not with the flesh. And I would just ask this question, where is their confidence now? Now that they're really being pushed, now that they're really being tested by King Nebuchadnezzar, where's their confidence in all of their powers now? They themselves, whether they're convinced of their powers or whether they know that they're just fakers, they know this is way outside of the scope of what they can do. Because of this thing, the king was angry and very furious and commanded that all the wise men of Babylon be destroyed. So the decree went out, and the wise men were about to be killed. And they sought Daniel and his companions to kill them. Then Daniel replied with prudence and discretion to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, who had gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon. He declared to Arioch, the king's captain, Why is the decree of the king so urgent? Then Arioch made the matter known to Daniel. And Daniel went in and requested the king to appoint him a time that he might show the interpretation to the king. Then Daniel went to his house and made the matter known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah his companions, and told them to seek mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that Daniel and his companions might not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision of the night. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, to whom belong wisdom and might. He changes times and seasons. He removes kings and sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells with him. To you, O God of my fathers, I give thanks and praise. For you have given me wisdom and might, and have now made known to me what we ask of you. For you have made known to us the king's matter." So Daniel and his three companions, they besought the Lord for an answer to this question from the king, and the Lord granted it. Therefore Daniel went in to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to destroy the wise men of Babylon. And he went and said thus to him, "Do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in before the king, and I will show the king the interpretation." There's a touch of irony here, and the irony is that none of the wise men could answer the king, but through Daniel and the one true God, all of these false prophets are spared, all of them. Then Arioch brought in Daniel before the king in haste and said thus to him, "I have found among the exiles from Judah a man who will make known to the king the interpretation." The king declared to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, "Are you able to make known to me the dream that I have seen and its interpretation?" Daniel answered the king and said, "No wise men, enchanters, magicians, or astrologers can show to the king the mystery of the king that the king has asked. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. Your dream and the visions of your head as you lay in bed are these." Before I continue, I just think it's notable that Daniel gives God the credit. He makes the distinction between himself as a servant of the one true God, and that none of the magicians, the astrologers, the soothsayers can touch this mystery. "To you, O king, as you lay in bed, came thoughts of what would be after this, and he who reveals mysteries made known to you what is to be. But as for me, this mystery has been revealed to me, not because of any wisdom that I have more than all the living, but in order that the interpretation may be made known to the king, and that you may know the thoughts of your mind. You saw, O king, and behold, a great image. This image, mighty and of exceeding brightness, stood before you, and its appearance was frightening. The head of this image was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its middle and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. As you looked, a stone was cut out by no human hand, and it struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces." May I have a cup of water, please, Lisa? "Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold all together were broken in pieces and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away, so that not a trace of them could be found. But the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. This was the dream. Now we will tell the king its interpretation." I think it's notable that these two parts are equally miraculous. First of all, that Daniel was shown by God what this man dreamed, and secondly, what it means. Can someone tell me what verse I was in? Thank you. "Now we will tell the king its interpretation. You, O king, the King of Kings, to whom the God of heaven has given the kingdom, the power, and the might, and the glory, and into whose hand he has given, wherever they dwell, the children of man, the beasts of the field, and the birds of the heavens, making you rule over them all. You are the head of gold. And indeed, Nebuchadnezzar was the most powerful king that had existed in Babylon. Another kingdom inferior to you shall arise after you, and yet a third kingdom of bronze, which shall rule over all the earth. And there shall be a fourth kingdom, strong as iron, because iron breaks to pieces and shatters all things. And like iron that crushes, it will break and crush all these. And as you saw the feet and toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, it shall be a divided kingdom, but some of the firmness of iron shall be in it. Just as you saw iron mixed with the soft clay, and as the toes of the feet were partly iron and partly clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly brittle. As you saw the iron mixed with soft clay, so they will mix with one another, one another in marriage. But they will not hold together, just as iron does not mix with clay. And in the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that shall never be destroyed, nor shall the kingdom be left to another people. It shall break in pieces all these kingdoms and bring them to an end, and it shall stand forever. Just as you saw that a stone was cut from a mountain by no human hand, and that it broke in pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold, a great God has made known to the king what shall be after this. The dream is certain, and its interpretation is sure. Hear the confidence in his voice. He just knows. He knew it from God. He knew that this was the truth. Now, I'm not good at piecing together the kingdoms, the subsequent kingdoms that were part of this statue, but I do know that the kingdom that comes and crushes all is the kingdom of Christ. And there are several, I say. I think there are some pretty mainstream understandings of who these different levels of the statue represent in history. But we do know that Christ's kingdom is the last mentioned kingdom. Here's this character again of King Nebuchadnezzar. I think he's pretty fickle. I mean, he just really, he's all over the place. He's going to kill you, and then he's just praising you and groveling. He's just everywhere. Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and paid homage to Daniel and commanded that an offering and incense be offered up to him. The king answered and said to Daniel, "Truly your God is God of gods and Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, for you have been able to reveal this mystery." The king gave Daniel high honors and many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief prefect over all the wise men of Babylon. Daniel made a request of the king, and he appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon, but Daniel remained at the king's court, which I think means that Daniel was right up there by the king's ear. He was closest to authority and position and power out of all of those four Hebrew brethren. And it isn't just it's in the next chapter where King Nebuchadnezzar swings back the other way and now he's ready to kill again. He was a violent man. And I think that is so notably distinct from the even-tempered, gentle, yet firm character of Daniel, speaking with confidence, not getting excited, and being a witness for God in a strange land. And I suppose that's all of our calling. So here we are in a strange land. I heard Brother Atlee say recently that we are missionaries to the United States of America. And we are. We are strangers and pilgrims in a strange land with people who don't understand us and don't see our ways, and yet they can testify of the goodness that they see in us, or at least that's my earnest hope for all of us. That's all I had to share this morning. I wanted to open it up for comments and maybe some more songs, anything God might have laid on your heart. There will not be a main message today. And so after we finish with comments or testimonies or any more scripture reading or songs, we'll break for lunch. God bless you all.
I appreciated the scriptures and the thoughts you shared, brother. A thought came to me about that story that I don't think I'd ever thought about it that way, and that was that Nebuchadnezzar, it doesn't really say that he actually had forgotten the dream. You could think that he has, but I could almost think, based on how he told those astrologers and the magicians, that, you know, that he had either had strong suspicions that they were just frauds, and they didn't have any idea. They were just making stuff up and telling him whatever. And he was accusing them of being that, and that this was his way, that he knew, I guess, that he felt confident that God some God was telling him something in this dream, and that if God tells these magicians, reveals things to them, he could reveal that dream to them, and so that maybe this was kind of his way of testing whether what somebody tells him the dream meant is actually from God, if a person can also tell him what he dreamed. I thought that it doesn't. Anyway, I appreciate the story and the thoughts you shared. God bless you.
Yeah, I have some thoughts to share too. Been very edified with that story. I wonder, as Daniel was explaining or predicting things, and he talked about the kingdom that would crush all other kingdoms, I wonder if he was in a place like I am today, or like we are, where we see that, we know that we're in the kingdom that will one day be fully fulfilled. It will be totally restored, you know, with the many mansions that are promised for us through the words of Jesus. And if it was so for Daniel, he would have been a part of that, what I call Old Testament believers, you might say, where they knew there's better things coming, and they put their hope in that. And that's the same hope that we have. Just the portion of the new thing that they didn't have, we have it now, and it's a new covenant. And so I believe if Daniel was in the new covenant, he'd probably be a church leader somewhere. He'd just be a great Christian. Anyhow, I really appreciate the things that were brought out. Never crossed my mind that, or I just didn't know that the name change that was given to the four young men, that those were not like Desirah's names. They were foreign names given to them. I don't know for sure. Did you say, Max, that possibly, or were you affirmingly saying that those were pagan type of names? But I could believe that. That they would have been, for a believing true Hebrew, that would have been a shameful thing to now have to have a foreign name on us. I wonder if the same thing's true with the food. I don't really find that much significance in just the nourishment one versus the other. I know there's people that have pretty strong ideas about the king's food wasn't nourishing, you know, the other food was. But I wonder if it's not more just the fact that, I mean, those wicked kings, they would usually sacrifice their food to idols. You know, they would do that. And I wonder if there wouldn't be, if that isn't the better significance for us, and would even help us to have some better application to the Acts 15 situation, where the only thing that they put on the Gentile believers was that they wouldn't eat food sacrificed to idols. Kind of maybe in line of whatever was going on for the Hebrew young men, how that they chose not to, they desired, or they did not do it to eat the king's food. And then, of course, surely there's even a more specific application for us. I mean, Max is right. He pointed out how we still have like a type of Nebuchadnezzars around us. If we have precedents that turn to astrologers for information and wisdom. And so I think we should be far removed from them and their ways and the ways that they set up as this. I mean, they set up society. These leaders largely are influential and set up society, so we have to just really take it to heart and how that, how that we're called to be separate from that and to be a peculiar people. And I can just really draw from that and learn from that. Appreciate everything. God bless you all.
Yeah, one thing that stood out to me that I wanted to draw a contrast to is the two types of kings. You have an earthly king who is angry and vengeful and very, you know, emotionally unstable. And you have to petition him to set aside a time. He's high and mighty and probably has a very high view of himself. And then you have the God of the universe who is loving and merciful and is ever looking to speak and commune with his people. And yet Daniel didn't have the information, but he knew. He walked with God enough that he knew that God would answer his prayers, and he would he had revealed this mystery unto him, and the Lord was faithful in that to reveal that. And I just really encourage us all to have that confidence that the Lord will commune with us and reveal things to us and open our minds to things and hear our prayers, our even if we do wrong, he's not looking to kill us. He's looking to heal us and to forgive us. And I just think that, we can have a view that God spoke once, but he is ever speaking. And he is ever desiring to fellowship and commune with us always.
Yeah. It's been a while since I read through Daniel. I remember last time I kind of went, but I thought there was something in it that I was trying to get out of there. I'm not sure. I was trying to put it together again, but like throughout these few passages where and interwoven through here is what Robert's talking about being a merciful God, like even towards the king with all his faults and his pride, even throughout all of that, like God was merciful to him too, like throughout these like he was working through Daniel, like he chastised him and all these, like it goes on, like the next chapter where he threw them into the fire, and then afterward he acknowledged like there's no God like the God of these people, but it wasn't his God. Like he was acknowledging it's their God, and this God is great, but it wasn't his God. Like there's a difference. But then in that chapter as well, like I have to think of their answer to the king when he was threatening to throw them into the fire. When we are in distress or when we are asking for healing, there was still this thing that those Hebrews had. They were like, they were confident God has all the power and he can save us from this affliction. But even if he decides not to, we won't bow down to your idol. Like, there was this, he can decide to do what he wants with me. I'll humble myself to whatever God decrees for me. We know he can do it. They didn't say he will, but we know he can. We won't bow down to this idol. But I wanted to point out then, like, okay, so it goes on, and then even after this, the king makes a decree and says, you know, any nation or tongue that blasphemes the God of these people, there will be consequences. I'll deal out consequences. But then, because of his pride later, the pride he had in the city that he had built, and he openly, like, patted himself on the back for, like, look at this great city that I have built. And here again, God was merciful, if you will, to him, said, this is what's going to happen. You're gonna go crawl around on the earth and be like an animal, and whatever the whole story goes, like, your hair is going to grow like feathers, and your nails like claws, until so and so many times have passed over. And then at the end of that time, when he came out of that, he acknowledged God, like, I know that he is true, that he is just. Like, the last things we read about Nebuchadnezzar was when he came out of that. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, I praise and extol and honor not the God of Daniel, but the King of Heaven now. I don't know where his state was, but he was no longer just saying it's his God, but it's the God of Heaven. For all his works are truth and his ways are just, and he is able to bring low those who walk in pride. And then that's the next chapter is about Belshazzar and the things he did. Anyway, that's all.
I was kind of thinking about if the representation of Nebuchadnezzar was supposed to be the head of gold, and the greatness of his kingdom, I don't know if that necessarily has to do with just the wealth of it or his power. But I kind of thought about to be a good king, you kind of have to have the people around you willing to tell you the truth. And the fact that he was willing to at least accept the idea that the soothsayers and the magicians and all them were a bunch of guys that were just looking to pull the wool over his eyes says a lot. And I kind of was thinking about the verses that talking about the last generation and saying that they have itching ears and they. They're looking for signs and wonders, and none of these signs and wonders would be given. And but Nebuchadnezzar was having the power and ability from God revealed to him in these circumstances. And for the soothsayers and that they're. If it wasn't for Daniel standing in the way, they would have had their heads cut off probably, or thrown into the fire all the same. And so in that, you see their representations of God revealing truth to wicked men who have their kingdoms and their rulings, and then and then also his mercy on those that are just and those that are unjust. Great representation.
Thank you, Brother Max. I think there is a reference, blessing for your zeal and Daniel, heroes, but I think there is a reference, and I'm pretty good inferior, something like when Jesus rebuking the unbelief in Galilee, Capernaum, Bethsaida, and where else? Capernaum, Bethsaida, and Chorazin. He says, well, the queen of the south will rise up against you, so won't the people in Jonah's generation. And I don't know if he says the king in the north. Now, king, is there a reference to Nebuchadnezzar also? The inference is that Nebuchadnezzar made it into the eternal glory. I think if it may not be there, but there's a reference of Nebuchadnezzar somewhere in the New Testament, whether it's Jesus or someone else. Okay, that would be my homework assignment when I go home. But just a few thoughts. Again, thank you, Brother Max. I got, when I come home last night, I saw the thing about, thing. I said, I can do this in 3 minutes. Maybe four. And, you know, it was funny that when you read that, you read Azariah, how you say it, Azariah, Meshach and I, Azariah. Brother Atlee gave a, he read that, the Song of Azariah, about a year ago, from the Apocrypha. So I read the song, the prayer of Manasseh this morning before I come to service. You know who Manasseh was? He was the worst king of all, yet he repented. Something like the thief in the cross and the greatest sinner of all time, the Apostle Paul, chief of all sinners, but just Manasseh, the thief in the cross, and Paul. And that gives hope for me and you, for everybody. If they can make it, then there's hope for us, like that. And just a couple of thoughts. A thought, and this has absolutely nothing to do with, it's basically the thing there, but I read this quote last night, and I never heard it. Maybe some of you know it. It's Billy Graham's most famous quote. And anyone you know it, you can shout it out. If you shout it, he said Billy Graham's most famous quote was, when you lose your money, nothing is lost. When you lose your health, something is lost. And what's the last one? Anyone know? When you lose your character, everything is lost. And I said, man, that's a good one. When you lose your money, nothing is lost. When you lose your health, something is lost. But when you lose your character, everything is lost. And it's not a Bible book, chapter, and verse, but I said, that's a good, lose that character. And Daniel didn't definitely lose his character. Another thought that was not much to do with it was, but one of the early Christians said, Justin Martyr said this, who was a martyr, who died, he said, though you can kill us, talking about the heathen, though you can kill us, you cannot hurt us. I love that quote. Though you can kill us, you cannot hurt us. He's got his eyes focused on the things above. Okay, just a few thoughts from 2 Corinthians. I've been listening to this before I go to work on a tape for a dozen times, so I know it by heart, but I always like 2 Corinthians. It's so comforting. Just a few thoughts from there. Chapter 4, verse 6, God who commanded light to shine out of darkness has shined in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God through the face of Jesus. Comparing that with Moses wore a veil over his face. The brightness was too strong, but it was fading away. But he says, God who said in the beginning, let there be light, commanded from light out of darkness, is now shining in the hearts of the men the light of the glory of God. So you are the light of the world, the salt of the world. And this is, what a contrast it is. What a blessing it is. Another one is, 4, 16, and 17. And these verses just are my favorites. You know, yours may be much better than the ones I showed. Chapter 4 and verse 6. I'm sorry. Chapter 4, 16 and 17. For we faint not. Oh, by the way, the book of 2 Corinthians in chapter 1 must say about 6 or 7 times it uses one word. Anyone know what it is? It's repeated. And you need it more than anyone, Rob, right now, what you're going through with your family. God bless you, brother. It's God of what? The God of comfort. Comfort. And we always need comfort, not just when someone's close to death, but someone who hasn't come to the Lord. Praise the Lord for Veronica, who was baptized a while ago. Anyway, for here's what Paul says. For which we faint not, but though the inward man is perishing, but though the outward man is perishing, the inward man is being renewed day by day. For our momentary light affliction produces us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. And that's the new man. That's the new creature. Just a couple more verses that really mean something to me. For we all must appear before the judgment seat of Christ to give an account of what we've done in the body, whether good or bad. How I'd like to take Norman on my right, Tay on my left, and say, all go in threes. But it isn't. It's going to be by yourself. And it's a scary thing. Just by yourself. I would like to take all of us. And, you know, like a group judgment, pass fail, like that. But it isn't. It's something that each one of us are going to stand before the Lord and give an account of what we've done, whether good or bad. You know, good or bad. So let's press on and be humble. Lay up treasures in heaven and do those things. And then the next verse says, knowing the terror of the Lord, we persuade men. Let's be persuasive, but not abrasive. I can be abrasive sometimes and say, you know, well, someone watches the Super Bowl, but no, be persuasive and not abrasive. Such as some of you, a thing like that. For today is the day of salvation. For we know the grace of our Lord Jesus, although he was rich, he became poor. By his poverty, we may become rich. And the last one, now, and, oh yeah, how about this one? Thanks be to God for his unspeakable gift. Oh, that's a comfortable one, huh? Thanks be to Lord for his unspeakable gift. Indescribable. Anyone thinks he can describe God as, you know, powers, mystery, time, eternality, omnipresence, omniscience, is a fool. Nobody can understand it. But we believe it. And the last one would be, okay, chapter 10, verse 1. Now, I, Apostle Paul, I beg you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ, when present and humble, but when absent and bold, that you walk. And so Paul had that, he had that thing, you know, when his personal appearance wasn't that great, you know, because he was, last week they talked about how he was whipped, what, five times or something? You know, you can barely, within your, you know, you barely stay alive after that, and all those beatings he took. But he said, I beg you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ. And when he's away from them, when he's with them, he's humble. But when he's absent to them, he's bold. And then the last verse would be, for he that glories, let him glory in the Lord. And so that's something. May the Lord be magnified. Thank you.
There is someone who daily my needs has supplied. These are things just have left. There's someone on high. It is his mercy and grace that allows me to live. He deserves all the
Thank you.